On Canucks, your daily podcast on the Vancouver Canucks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Locked On Canucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And thank you for making Locked On Canucks your first listen of the day. And today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. My name is Nick Bondi. I'm joined by my brilliant co-host, Lachlan Irvin. And Lachlan, another game to talk about to start off this episode. We'll start with that. We'll talk about the Travis Hamonic situation because I think there is some developments that need discussing. And we'll end with a discussion on what the power play could perhaps look like to start the season. But last night's game, you know, it was the highly anticipated first preseason game in BC in quite a while, probably since 2019, I guess. It's been a hot minute, and they played well. I thought they obviously, you know, the Flames were not going to feel like a really, really strong lineup. It was very similar to what the Canucks did in Seattle, right? Kind of, you know, a couple NHLers here that I know the Flames had Mangiapane and Dubé playing, but yeah, they had a few NHLers, but it was very much, you know, the Canucks exerting their will, I think, on that game. I think Jack Rathbone, to me, that's the biggest story maybe out of this game, is Jack Rathbone looks like a lock to make this team out of training camp, right? He's very clearly, in my opinion, one of the best six defensemen on this team. Pod Colson, I love Pod Colson's game. The Russian Mark Stone. I think I'm going to start calling him that. The Russian Mark Stone. And if he turns into the Russian Mark Stone, the Canucks got a hell of a player on their hands.
But I was just thinking Russian Wayne Gretzky. Let's just cut to the chase here. Russian Wayne Gretzky.
It's the greatest Russian player since Sergei Fedorov. But
there we go.
But you know what? Like there's a lot of things I think could take from this game, Lachlan.
Absolutely. First of all, just the fact that this is the first game I believe the Canucks have played in front of fans since 2020. I don't think they've had a single game in that time, whether on the road or not. I think some, especially for like the guys who have been playing through the playoff bubble through last season, I think they really fed off of that. The fact that there was actually a crowd, and it was a home crowd behind them, at least in Abbotsford anyway. And the duet held that was there, for, especially considering the price of admission to get in for a preseason game.
That was a preseason game. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Again,
for sure.
We talked about it on last episode. You hand me a $70 ticket to Abbotsford. Cool. Then I got to pay for the gas to get out there. They're going to charge parking when you're out. I've been to the Abbotsford Center for a Fraser Valley Bandits game. They will charge you for parking.
Wow.
So you got to factor that into it. I'm sure they're going to pay for parking for Abbotsford Canucks games, but essentially you hand me the $70 ticket. Okay, cool. Even if I want to pay that, there's a whole other cost associated with going out there. But yeah, shout out to the fans who did make the trip, and maybe some of them live in Abbotsford, and shout out to the ones maybe who live actually in the lower mainland here. That's commitment. I like it.
If you made the trip to that game, to that preseason game, it's probably just because you are so dying to get some live hockey in front of you that you are willing to pay that money, pay for the parking, I guess, as well, and just see a game, even if it was just preseason. The crowd really was really into the game. There were lots of points where they were making up for the fact that it wasn't a full building. They were doing a very good job. I also want to take a quick moment to shout out the Canucks for their Truth and Reconciliation Day celebration.
Yes,
they did
absolutely.
At the beginning, I think, or I think that was very well done. I think it was very tasteful. They're not afraid to, use like the big words that come with that. And I think it's admirable. I think the Canucks sometimes have been a little bit tougher on those sorts of situations. They've had a little bit, hockey teams are not always the most progressive, but I think it's good to see that the Canucks really took it and did a very responsible, very good job with it. So shout out to them for that. And as for on the ice, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Jack Rathbone. I think Rathbone has been, I think, far and away the best player through both games so far this preseason. He has looked, he's looked like an NHL guy. Like there has been many points, like there have been many points in the last two games where it's not a case of you're looking at a guy like a rookie who's just making his way, kind of, you know, feeling his way out through the process. He's very much looks like an established guy already, even with the short resume he's got at this level. I've been consistently impressed by the way that he's able to get into the play. He's able to get and make smart defensive plays. There was one shift where him and Tyler Myers both had very good defensive plays in their own end, and they saved good scoring chances out of it. They both looked quite good in that game. Oliver Ekman-Larsson also looked pretty good. He had a couple assists. First star of the game. He was the first star of that game.
That was a bit that baited me. Was he the best player? I don't know. It seemed like the Canucks were like doing this to him a solid. Like they 100% the Canucks saw the video of him, you know, the terrible bag skate video. I'm like, you know what? We got to boost this guy's confidence. Let's get him the first star and see if that helps.
Which is
preseason. I don't mind it. Yeah. Like who cares? Yeah, but like, it's still funny.
I think he was the second star. Personally, if it were me picking the three stars of the game, I would have given it to Mikey DiPietro. I think he was very good. I think for a guy, again, this was his second pro game in the last 12 months or something, some insane amount of time since basically last 2019-20. Because I believe he only played one game in Utica all of last year because of the way the taxi squad worked out. And he made up for it. He was, like, for that lost time very quickly. He was exceptional. He was tracking the puck very well. He was making key saves. There were a couple, like, five-alarm stops that he made at key points in that game. One point where Andre Mangiapane basically just bowled into him, and he got up and just kept going. He was on top of his game. I think he was the best player on the ice for the Canucks in that game yesterday.
Yeah, and Mikey DiPietro, like you mentioned, he hasn't really played that much over the past year and a bit, right? Because of the taxi squad situation. You're a goalie guy. Your brand is goalies. Should I be concerned? Should I be concerned that two of those goals were, you know, screens in front that he didn't see the puck? Because we all know DiPietro is kind of he's taller than me. He's 6 feet. I'm about 6 feet, so he's short for a goalie. But, you know, should I be concerned in that instance that, you know, two of those goals were screens in front where he couldn't see over the guy, where that's going to be a disadvantage for him, right? Like, if you like bigger goal, the trend is bigger goalies, right? Like 6'4", 6'5", plus. So is that, and should I be concerned going forward off one preseason game?
If we're talking about his height, like in terms of like, should you be concerned based like specifically on height? I would say no. Goalies sometimes are like teams put too much stock into the goaltender size. I do think size does help. It does matter. But what smaller goalies lack in size, they make up for in their athletic ability, their ability to crouch a little bit lower in their stance and see around players sometimes. And being able to get that second or third rebound a little bit because they don't have to pull, say, as much body weight as like a bigger guy does, or as much equipment, frankly, as a bigger guy does. That can really factor in. They play a little bit farther back in their stance. They play a little bit more athletic. I wouldn't worry about it in that regard. Especially if you saw Alex Nedeljkovic in Carolina last year, he's a shorter guy. He did very well for them last year. As for like screens in front of the net, I think that kind of stuff, like that's a bit of a communication thing, I would say, rather than a, like that is probably something in line with the fact that he hasn't played a lot in the last year, because, you know, screenshots are kind of a two person deal in that regard, where it's just as much the goalie's job to try and see around that guy as it is the defenseman's job to move them out of the way. And to move out of the way and make sure your goalie is getting a clean view of the puck. Sometimes teams put a lot of stock into blocking shots. Obviously, the Canucks have been a team that really likes to block shots in their own end quite a bit. And sometimes if that doesn't work out, that means suddenly your goaltender is not able to see the puck that they might have been if you get a clear view of it. It's a little bit of it's very much a give and take situation where it's about the communication. If you're Mikey DiPietro, you got to be yelling at your defenseman and say, hey, move them out, or like trying to get them to either push the defenseman out of the way, or if you can see around them, you're working through it. I think that's a case where he'll get better at that kind of stuff as he goes along. I think that's a case of also the defenseman, you know, not necessarily having much experience playing in front of DiPietro. I think they'll get there as they go. He'll get better at seeing through legs and bodies and such.
Yeah, and maybe this would be a bit more of a concern if DiPietro was going to be the backup for the Canucks going forward in the season. But of course, I think, you know, signing Jaro Halak to that deal pretty much solidifies that the Canucks are going to be sending Mikey DiPietro down to the Abbotsford Canucks. And to be honest, I'm not concerned at all, which is good. And I'm not concerned at all. I just want to see how well we could get upset over over a preseason game over two goals. I just wanted to see if we could get upset over it. Another player, we talked about OEL, the new addition from the Arizona/Phoenix Coyotes. I still like to call them the Phoenix Coyotes because I'm stuck in my ways like that. Connor Garland.
But you mean the Glendale, Tempe, Phoenix, Arizona Coyotes?
The Quebec City Coyotes. Let's make that happen. It's
the Quebec Houston Coyotes.
Yeah, we've had enough of the desert hockey experiment, I think. But you know what? Connor Garland. He I think had another. He had a great debut. I thought. I think he's going to be. I tweeted out that Pod Colson is going to be a fan favorite for the Vancouver Canucks because his tenacity and skill. And Connor Garland, I think, is going to be right up there as well. He has a nice mix of kind of, you know, tenacity, you know, good on the forecheck and skill. Like, I think he's going to put up a ton of points with the Canucks.
For sure. The guys the Canucks have been somewhat missing over the last few years, at least from a style of play department, has been the guys who can contribute offensively, but that doesn't necessarily take away from their ability to go into the corners and, you know, and be able to get into the tougher plays. Sometimes, like, that's every team needs to have like a good, healthy balance of guys who can go in and retrieve pucks and guys who stay a little bit outside a lot in the slot area more so. And Garland is a mixture of both. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. And that's a rare kind of case. You don't get a lot of guys who could do that as well as he does. And yeah, his one goal was a very good example of that, where he gets the puck. He skates in right into the thicket of the defense. He takes the first shot, rebound pops right out in front, and he battles his way through one of the Flames defenders and gets a second shot at it, puts it right through the five hole on the Flames.
That was a great goal. That was tenacious goal.
Yeah, that's exactly what he scored, a very on brand goal for what he is as a player. That was a perfect example of what kind of stuff you're going to see from him in Vancouver this year and what the Canucks are going to want out of him, especially depending on who he's playing with on the ice, at least from the most likely probably playing second or third line. That's the type of play you want to see from him. And I'm excited to see what he can do against against full on NHL competition as we get close farther and farther into the preseason.
Yeah, the two Coyotes looked pretty good in their preseason debut. One player who wasn't there is Travis Hamonic, and we're going to get to him in a second. But first, I want to talk to everyone about Rock Auto. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. The ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers to access with rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. With Rock Auto, you can save time and money. It's a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How'd you hear about us, box? So they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for all the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion, and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package.
Travis Hamonic, you know, we've hinted at it before on this show. We didn't really want to talk about it because there wasn't really anything to any updates, but I think there's been a few since we last discussed it to warrant a discussion on this podcast. So if you remember back in Jim Benning's press availability, I think it was last Wednesday now, he said the team's going to be 100% vaccinated. Travis Hamonic's going to be in camp soon. Well, it's close to a week later, and Travis Hamonic is still not in the Canucks training camp. Rick Dhaliwal was quoted as saying, things I heard over the weekend is he's thinking about retirement, sitting out for the season, or coming back. Everything is at play. Elliot Friedman said, quote, I'm really wondering if at the very least Hamonic is considering opting out this year. I mean, it's a fluid situation. People, you know, it's a common phrase out there for these types of things. It's a very fluid situation. By the time this thing comes out, maybe Travis Hamonic makes a decision one way or another. I mean, just from the comments of Jim Benning, it sounds like this is a vaccine related issue, right? Like, it's pretty, if you're playing on a Canadian team with the amount of border travel you're going to have to do, you almost have to get vaccinated, and you're risking losing not only, you know, playing time, obviously, because you have to spend your time quarantining, but money, you know, it comes out of the player's pocket when they miss games due to quarantine issues because they're not vaccinated, right? So a lot of things at play here, Lachlan, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe there was a report from Rob Simpson of Vancouver Hockey Now talking about how Hamonic's camp is interested in a trade to a U.S. market potentially.
Yeah. How much value does like a openly unvaccinated player have though? That's my issue.
That is a fantastic question. And I would say it very much, Garrett, depends on it's probably very much a team by team case, right? Like depending on where, you know, depending on how many times you play a Canadian team in a season, how many times you, what your state's regulations are regarding COVID.
Yeah, because the only division that doesn't have any Canadian teams in it would be the Metropolitan Division with like the Caps and the Penguins and all those teams. So I can see that maybe being a fit, but if you're Jim Benning trying to trade Travis Hamonic because of the vaccine situation, you don't have much leverage at all, if any.
Exactly. And I would say I would imagine the Canucks do not want that. I would imagine that is not the route they would want to go.
Well, yeah, they obviously signed him because they wanted him to play, right?
Like, like in terms of like looking at this situation, obviously the dream scenario is he gets vaccinated, he gets his vaccinations and he plays. But if like that's not the case, I would imagine the thing that's probably they would like best at the very least, is they'd hope he retires simply because that would wipe his cap hit off of their books, which they could then use to pay Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes if they so chose. Obviously, regardless, right now the Canucks defense isn't in the best shape, especially on that right side where Hamonic is needed. And if we're just talking from an on-ice perspective, from a strictly on-ice perspective, not having Hamonic available definitely does hurt their ability to ice a better defensive group. But if he's not going to get vaccinated, I don't know exactly what the thought process is behind that. But like, you know, it's dangerous for your team. Like it puts the rest of your vaccinated players at risk. So it's not worth the headspace, frankly. So you hope they find a way out of this situation. If you're the Canucks, you hope they're able to find a way out of that situation where they're able to clear that cap off of the space, or at the very least, or you hope that Hamonic gets vaccinated. There's only so much we can say right now, obviously, because it's one of those you know but you don't know kind of things. Oh, yeah. You hope that the right people get in touch and, you know, get in touch with him and are able to, you know, talk him into getting the vaccination, getting that done, because, frankly, yeah, it's going to be hard for him to find, anywhere to play really any in this league. If it's not even regardless of where that is or, whether it's in the States or in Canada, it's going to be pretty tough. So, you know, you just hope that there's a reasonable, rational, like, solution to getting to solving this, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned the, Travis Hamonic obviously has a $3 million cap hit. That's off the books. You can sign, Elias Pettersson and quit. Well, it gives you more space to, you know, work out a deal with those two. I was arguing with someone on Twitter. He was saying like, oh, you should just sign someone for $1 million on that right side, then use the other space to sign Pettersson Hughes. And I was just thinking like, who are you going to find for $1 million? That's going to be, that's even worth it to, you know, fill that spot. I mean, it's kind of a bad situation, but at the same time, I would rather, you know, take that cap space. If this happens again, we're speculating here. This happens, take that cap space, get, you know, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes signed. And then I guess they're kind of hooped on that right side. I mean, most people were, myself included, pretty much everyone was penciling Travis Hamonic as a top four right shot defenseman for this team. And to lose him at the last second would be kind of devastating. But I'm just of the opinion, you take that cap space and you try and work out a deal with Pettersson Hughes. Sure, you can sign someone on the right side for $1 million, but would it even be worth it? Like, you can, I guess you can play, you're probably forcing someone like a Luke Shannon, maybe start playing like top 4 minutes. It wouldn't be the best fit. And I think what happened here, and again, this is 100% me speculating, I think what happened, like, people are ripping Jim Benning online. Like, how do you not inquire about this in the free agency process, which is fair enough. It's probably a good question to ask. I think what happened is, you know, obviously we were in a different spot late July than there was here. It was looking like BC was going to be wide open in terms of pandemic restrictions. I think what happened is Hamonic signs here thinking, okay, I don't have to get the vaccine even if I need to, right? Like, it's going to be wide open. I can do whatever. And then, you know, late September rolls around, there's still restrictions and stuff. And he's like, well, I don't want to get the vaccine. He kind of puts him in a tough situation. Again, speculating. That's just what I think the whole thing kind of has boiled down to.
Yeah, it really has kind of, it's come, it is more or less come to that. I will, and I do agree with you in the sense of like, you know, I think frankly, as far as we're concerned with the Canucks and their future, I think you're better off as a franchise giving that extra money that might, if it becomes available, to your cornerstone defenseman and your cornerstone center, rather than trying to get 1 year out of a cheap defenseman. I think you can go a lot farther. I mean, I think you can get a lot farther as a team with Hughes and Pettersson probably than one extra guy on that defense on that right side, right? But as far as the Canucks are concerned, as far as their defense looks right now, I mean, Myers, Poolman, and Shen on that right now would be their top three. It maybe frees up a spot for, say, Brad Hunt as your seventh defenseman. It's not a situation like losing Hamonic isn't good. Like, it's definitely not it's not good for them, but it's also not I wouldn't say it's a situation that is completely unsolvable. It's not a spot like that. It's not impossible to replace him necessarily. There are options out there that could potentially be okay, again, as a stopgap kind of deal. Maybe your biggest concern with Hamonic is more to do, frankly, with Quinn Hughes and the fact that the guy who he spent most of last season with as his partner is gone. The year before, his partner was Chris Tanev. He's gone. You haven't found him really a long-term proper defensive partner yet. And he's been here for two in some odd years. That might be your biggest concern. I think as far as the Canucks are concerned, frankly, I think you're much better off like hoping that money comes off your books and hoping that you can use it to get your franchise players back.
For someone like Tucker Poolman, maybe that's a fit for Quinn Hughes, right? Is someone like Tucker Poolman, like people penciled in with beside OEL, but maybe because of this situation, he has to play with Quinn Hughes. Maybe that's just the compromise that they have to come to.
Yeah. I honestly think it doesn't change the way the Canucks are going to look at their defense all too much. Like because it was going to be Ham. It was going to be a situation where probably Shen was probably going to be the odd man out, which would mean that you're basically, you know, Hamonic and Poolman were kind of your two. Are you picking between one of them? the only real difference now is it's Pullman and Shen, and then you basically are picking, say, between Hunt. You're picking like a Hunt or Uelevi. It maybe frees you up to do a little bit more down the line, maybe call up a few more guys. Hopefully, I think this situation, it sucks that it's happening. Again, if you're listening to the show and you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated. This is a pro vaccination podcast. Yeah.
If you're not vaccinated and you listen to the show, we do not want you listening to the show. I'm saying that right now.
Sure. That's fair. Get vaccinated, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Please get vaccinated if you're able to do so. Like there are medical reasons, but get back. If you can, please get vaccinated. Very important.
Yeah, and if you are not vaccinated, please stop listening right now. So we're gonna talk about the power play. I think another interesting battle in this preseason / training camp has been the battle for the power play spots. But first, I want to talk to everyone about betonline.ag. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back to start another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new and updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline.ag continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use a mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. Don't forget to use the promo code NFL100. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Okay, so we're ending our shows for the next little while with training camp battles on Locked On Canucks, your first listen of the day. Lachlan, the power play is going to be pretty interesting, I think, this season. The Canucks probably have enough forward talent, I think, to have two pretty solid power play units rolling out there. Last night, we were watching the game. They rolled out a unit of OEL, Garland, JT Miller, Bo Horvat, Alex Chiasson. Obviously, there's no Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes in the lineup. It's kind of a mishmash, in my opinion, of the first power play unit and the second power play unit. But what are your thoughts, Lachlan, on the power play units to start the season when the regular season gets going?
Well, first of all, Alex Chiasson, for a guy who came in on a PTO, already getting some pretty prime opportunities.
He's got a good shot to be on that fourth line, I think. I think he's got a very good shot.
He 100% does. He got an assist last night. He was okay. He did pretty well. He wasn't like a star of the show or anything, but he didn't really have to be. That first power play unit today, like, that's obviously, it's going to change a little bit. I know obviously, you know, you're missing your two of your prime gunners right now in Hughes and Pettersson, plus Besser was not playing in that game. And he's obviously going to be on your first power play unit. Like you mentioned, the great thing about this year's team compared to, say, last season's the year before that even as well, is the fact that, you know, it had been a situation for a while where the Canucks had power play unit one and then five guys who were kind of just out there to kill time. They didn't really have a proper second power play unit. This year, you actually have the players, enough players to make a serious case for a second unit. I think right now, let's say cards on the table, Pettersson and Hughes are in the lineup for opening night.
They better be. Obviously, they better be.
They better be.
It's a fireable offense by Jim Benning if they miss any regular season games. I'll say that right now on this podcast.
Yes, they should be. They 100% should be. Power play two right now, I think the most interesting case is to see, say, whether they go with a two defenseman unit of OEL and Rathbone, because I think that is a possibility. But if they're only going with one guy, I think the tie goes to the veteran a little bit right now. I don't think you need to put any more pressure on Rathbone as a young guy developing, that, say, quarterbacking a power play unit would come with. I do think it would be good for them to get him into some opportunities to work on that second power play unit. If that means sometimes coming at the expense of a fourth forward, maybe throw Rathbone in there, see what he can do with OEL there, and just like, see if they can, if, uh, Ekman-Larsson can show him the ropes a little bit to potentially take over at that
point. And there's also going to be injuries throughout the season, right? Like at some point, like knock on wood, maybe it's not a season ending injury for like a Quinn Hughes or an OEL, but
I don't even want to think about that.
knock on wood.
Why would you even put that into the universe? How dare you?
Oh yeah, no, I'm regretting that already saying that out loud, but you know what? Like we've watched enough Canucks hockey over the years. There's going to be injuries. I think, Rathbone, I don't think you pressure him right now. And I think you wait for, you know, an opportunity for him to get into the game naturally on that power play two unit, right?
Yeah. I think the way things are looking right now, I think you're going to see a very similar, at least similar power play one to start the year with, you know, you have Pettersson, Besser, Miller, and Horvat out there with Hughes. And then your second pairing is probably, I think you mentioned Putkolzin. I think Putkolzin gets some time on that second power play unit pretty quickly.
Last night, Lachlan, and we saw it. Like, I remember I'm a big World Juniors guy. I don't pretend to have watched Putkolzin play in the KHL all the time, but I did watch the World Juniors. And one thing he is very good at is, you know, setting up guys for really good chances, right? Like that could come in handy on a power play, on a second power play unit.
Yeah. I think you'll see a scenario here where I think the one thing that could really change is one of, say, Miller or Horvat moving down to that second unit to kind of be the guy out in the front of the net guy. Cause usually they kind of switch off between those positions. One, they're usually like behind the net and playing out right out in front of the slot. I think you might see one of those guys for kind of the like veteran presence on the forward group, kind of go down and play on that second unit, with Garland and Putkolzin. And then maybe
I would say out of those two, it'd be Miller. Just because I think probably you can't Miller. Take Horvat out of that bumper spot in the power play, right? That's his bread and butter. He's done so well there. Like, why mess with it?
Yeah, I think you go with I think you put Miller probably down there, and then I think if you're and probably Tanner Pearson is your last guy there. Maybe a flip between him and Jason Dickinson. Maybe I don't know what his power play ice time is like. I know he's more of a defensive guy. But I think that's probably what you're going to see, at least to start the year. I do think, again, I think that just even talking about the fact that you could, have Garland, Putkolzin, Miller, and then, either Tanner Pearson or a second defenseman there. And Hoglander. I realized I didn't even mention Hoglander in that list. That's another guy that's missing from that group. Hoglander's
so
probably number
for the
one.
Canucks right this season, man. Like, we're forgetting Hoglander.
Hoglander's probably power play one guy. Like that's now that when you think about it, he's probably on that first group. Really? So maybe I would say so. I think you want as many shooters as you can in that first group. I think one of the things the Canucks got into their, got into a rhythm, especially when they really struggled on the power play at times, was just overpassing and not finding enough time and trying too hard to get the perfect shot rather than trying to just throw it on net and seeing if they could get a rebound and crash for a rebound. I think maybe there's a situation there where Hoglander's up on that. Maybe Horvat and Miller are both on unit two. Maybe you go with both of them down on that second pairing. You just run a whole young gun group where it's just Pettersson, Hughes, Besser, Hoglander, and then Putkolzin maybe from time to time. Maybe you throw him in there, see what you can do.
That is
like
a hot take.
All
right
out attack.
Horvat and Miller on power play two. That is a hot take.
I think the best part about the way the situation this year as well is that it's very interchangeable. Like I don't think it's a case of you're going to see somebody mad that they're getting power play too. I think it's going to be those two groups rather than say one group going for a minute 30 and the other for like 30 seconds. I think it's going to be much closer to that 1 minute for the first group, 1 minute for the second. I think they're very interchangeable that way where you can just shuffle them in between and see who's working and who isn't.
Yeah, and I think for the Vancouver Canucks this season, it's going to have to be a repeat of the 19-20 season, which we saw with the power play was just great, and that really helps them win a bunch of these close games. But that has it today for another episode of Locked On Canucks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Nick Bondi with my co-host Lachlan Urban. Thank you for making Locked On Canucks your first listen of the day. And don't forget to make your second listen of the day, Locked On Bets. Betting on hockey doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, I listen to a lot a sports gambling podcast, and I really like this one because these guys actually know what they're talking about, unlike a lot of sports gambling podcasts. Get daily picks, blowout specials, the wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's Lock of the Day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. See you tomorrow.